Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Lee Cantor here with Sanjay Torre, another episode of Atlanta Business Radio. We've got a full house here today, Sanjay.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited to hear about all these stories.
I know. Let's kick it off. First up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Judy Rasmus.
That's right.
With Properly. Welcome.
Thanks for having us, guys.
Well, tell us a little bit about Properly. How are you serving folks?
So Properly is a digital real estate agency we launched here in Atlanta 4 years ago. It's basically a more optimal way of selling your house. Flat $5,000 fee, go online, get a valuation, and then you really manage your entire process from start to finish on that particular platform.
So then it's self-serve for the owner? Like it's a
There's technology manages most of the profit or the process, but we don't take the person out of it, right? So you still have guidance and counsel from a licensed broker, but it's just a more optimal online way of selling your home.
And then is this, okay, so I have a home. Is this, who's the type of person who would do this type of transaction?
So our demographic usually tends to skew a little bit of a person that has a more expensive home because of the value proposition of the $5,000 flat fee. But it's also somebody who really gravitates to technology and has kind of wondered why they've maybe spent the kind of money that they've spent in commissions time and time again when they've sold their house. So we do have a lot of younger first-time sellers that this is the way that they want to transact. But we also have a lot of people that have expensive homes and those commissions, they don't always feel the work is warranted.
Now, do you help with the buying? Because you know, people have to buy once they're selling.
Yeah, no. So we're not doing anything on the buy side at all right now.
Okay, we feel that strictly selling.
That's right. Most important thing for us is to be accessible for the sellers. And whether it be online, through chat, texting, or whether it is that they actually want to have a phone call with somebody. So if we were out running buyers around and showing them houses, we wouldn't be able to do a good job of what we're doing.
That level of service.
Yeah.
So now, how did this whole idea begin? What was the catalyst?
So my co-founder, who's based out of New York, was finishing up at Harvard Business School, and he took a look at industries that he wanted to change. I was a 30-year veteran of real estate. So
you were a traditional residential real estate broker.
Correct. And we collided and decided to change the way that it felt to sell your home. And part of that for me was technology, using something to optimize the way that we did this process. And it was just, it was a good blend of a young person that had never owned real estate, that had never sold a house before.
And didn't understand kind of the nuance.
And
of
said,
this.
Why are we doing it the way we're doing it?
Right.
Right. So we're trying to break a lot of the traditional process that you go through when you sell a house. What really matters? How do we drive it with data? How do we make the sellers more knowledgeable about the market and where the market is? And, you know, it's just people prefer this method.
So now what is the what's the advantage to me other than saving some money in commission? Is this happen faster? Am I going to be able to sell it faster? Is there less hassle? Like what?
I think all of those things. We're 18 days on the market before we go under contract is our average right now. We're selling at 98%. Of what we value the property at when you get a valuation online. And that's where you start the process. So we really want people to go online to sellproperly.com, get a valuation. And you might wait 3 months before you list your house, but you're getting information about the market delivered to you in real time as it happens, instead of having to log onto a site and say, oh, I've got to go to Zillow and see what's changing in my neighborhood. So once you go online, we've built a lot of technology around showing and
so that's my responsibility to show?
The buyer's agents are going to show your property. We make it accessible to them. They're going to text into a number. It's going to come right to your phone. You're going to be able to receive the text and either say that time works for you or there is a better time. We've got offer management process where the offers are presented to you online. So it's just from start to finish, you can manage that entire process.
Now, do you think the key component of this is getting that good valuation that shows that I'm going to be getting what I'm looking for?
Yeah. So I think it's a collaboration between us and our sellers. We've got to make sure we bring the market data to them. And we've also got to listen to them about what they believe their house is worth. We want to make sure that these sellers understand we're in a changing market right now, a market we haven't seen in probably 9 or 10 years. So properties that flew off the market previously aren't selling as quickly as they did. What do we have to do to position that particular seller properly so that they are going to sell in a normal amount of market time and maximize equity?
And then is it the same, like it's 5,000 flat fee is the fee for this? Is it the same thing where I have a contract with you to sell it within a period of time that we agree on? And then
yeah, so our typical listing period is 90 days. Mm-hmm. Most of the times we're under contract with that. And then if a seller, you know, decides that they want to go a different route, they can go after that period.
And there's no obligation to pay unless it sells.
That's right.
So that's similar in that regard.
Right. Exactly.
And then what about like the closing experience?
So we're trying to change the way that feels as well. When you close on a house, the seller really doesn't have a lot of documentation that they have to sign. It's really all on the buyer side. Mm-hmm. So most of the times we want to have our sellers do mail-aways, or we'll actually send the closing attorney to them so that they sign their documents ahead of time and the check shows up in their account once it's closed.
So there's no big meeting in an office? And
there's really not a need for it.
Right. But right? That's a pretty big disruption because that's not how things have been historically.
Yeah. We just want to change the way it feels. We want to make sure that the things that we're asking our sellers to do actually are contributing to the sale.
Now, what was it like for you to pivot from being in the real estate business, doing that kind of work, and all of a sudden now you're in a startup where it's kind of the Wild West? And
yeah, you know, are we a startup if we're 4 years old?
Well, are you?
I don't know. I feel like it's some days, and other days I feel like we're grown up. We launched in Charlotte this year, mm-hmm. In January.
So you started in Atlanta?
Was that
your first market outside?
That's our first scaling market, yeah. We raised capital out of New York, so we've got two big VC funds behind us. And I think Ben and I are committed to this being a lot more than just a small regional real estate company. Mm-hmm. We want to change the way it happens. We want to change the way that it feels. We want that our sellers to feel that not only did they get a value proposition, but they got great service as well.
So now what kind of feedback are you getting? It took 4 years here to get mm-hmm. the systems down, I guess, in order to feel confident to go into another market.
Yeah, Charlotte's actually been easier for us than Atlanta. I think there's a lot less noise. Mm-hmm. I think people were looking for an alternative method of doing this. I don't think the value proposition is as important in Charlotte. I think it's more they wanted to transact in a different way.
And then what's the price of a house worth $5,000? I'm not good at math. Makes sense.
Right at about 170, uh-huh. where it's a break even. Our average sales price right now is 450 something.
Right. So when it gets into the $4, $5, $6 million.
Yeah, we've done $2 million house.
So
right?
then it gets silly at that point.
Yeah. The savings. But are they there for the savings, or are they there for the way that it transacts?
The ease of transaction.
And I think it's a combination of both.
And then as you scale, like right now you have funding, you're based here, and do you have boots on the ground in Charlotte, or this is all being done remotely?
So most of it's being done remotely. We have one person on the ground who basically does the installation of our signs and our lock boxes. He does our condition assessments where we actually go out and see the houses. So we couldn't do this and be as accurate as we are.
So you need actually somebody there to do an appraisal of some sort?
Yeah, it's not really an appraisal. It's more of a visit where we assess the property and we help the homeowner know the positives and negatives. We give them some staging tips. Mm-hmm. So we're understanding the property as much as we're helping them understand the market.
But that person's not a broker.
So they can be, or they can be a field representative. We've got both. Mm-hmm. Sometimes there's brokers that they wouldn't be handling the transaction, the real estate transaction itself, but they may have a real estate license. Mm-hmm.
But that's not a mandatory because that's not their role in this.
That's exactly right.
And then, so does the whole, it happens primarily online and there's chatting just over the web? Not like I can call you and go, hey.
Yeah, you could call me. We have people call all the time.
Really?
Right?
So
yeah.
At that level, too.
Yeah. So you basically start the process online with evaluation. You can schedule a listing consultation by picking a time on your calendar and our calendar that works for us to have a chat. And then we also schedule the condition assessment where we come out and see the property itself.
So the first valuation is kind of an estimate. And then when you come out, then you get kind of really into the...
the weeds of
what this is really going to go.
But
to
ironically, our value between our valuation and our condition assessment, there usually isn't a lot of change.
Really?
Yeah, there really isn't a lot of change. So it's the accuracy of understanding the things that we can't see on paper, the topography of the lot, the, you know, maybe some upgrades of that they put in when they built the house, mm-hmm. Things that wouldn't necessarily translate just in data. We're interested in understanding the things that are important to the seller in the transaction. That comes out in the phone calls and the condition assessment. And then it's basically go-to-market time.
Now, how are you seeing this kind of on the other hand? You mentioned Zillow earlier. Like, they're having a whole push now where they're the broker as well, and they're trying to sell the houses mm-hmm. and buy the houses. How does that come into play in this?
So those are iBuyers, and they're really not competition for us. Our competition is a traditional agent, right? Mm-hmm. The iBuyers like Zillow, Opendoor, OfferPad are out actually buying houses, fixing them up, and reselling them. So they're making a small spread between the purchase and when they rehab it, put it back on
but
the market.
But they're charging, I think, 7%.
They're charging upwards of 12 to 13%. Uh-huh. So it's a model that a buyer really wants out quick. Let's say that you've bought a new construction home and you have a townhouse and you need to close on that townhouse before you can buy the new construction home. They would be a possible for you. But it's going to cost you more money and you're going to have less equity at the end of it mm-hmm. by using one of the iBuyers.
And then when a person is putting something out there, they can go to Zillow and they can get an estimate of
Zestimate.
How are your numbers compared to that?
So Zestimates are driven by algorithms. We have a blend of algorithms as well as human intervention. So we're actually looking at that property ourselves personally when we're creating that valuation for you. We're setting search criteria for you that moving forward will determine what type of comps you have coming back to you.
Mm-hmm. So like if it says 200,000 Zestimate, what can your range be?
We don't really care what Zestimate says.
Could it be 300,000 or is it going to be plus or minus?
It really depends.
Like,
you know, some houses are hard to value, right? They need eyes on them. Mm-hmm. And an algorithm can't always accomplish that. And I think that's why people get hung up on what is their Zestimate and how does it relate to the true value of their home.
But aren't they going to push back if you say it's 150 and their Zestimate is 200?
It's got to be supported by data. Right. So we look at market position as well as price per square foot, and we support our valuations with data. I'm sure that there's sellers that don't agree with the valuation. They probably won't choose to do business with us. Right. But our accuracy is there. And we see sellers that get a valuation from us and then might list with somebody else. And perhaps their days on the market gets elongated and they end up dropping to that price again. The market's fluid, and we have to be the same way when we're valuing these properties. I think my 30-plus years of experience in the industry and valuing and selling thousands of homes really helps us hit the numbers. Have they built things for me that make it a lot easier? Absolutely.
But it's the balance from the seller's standpoint. They may not be in as much of a hurry, and they want to get top dollar. So they're like, look, I'm here. I'm not going to sell until I get this number.
Yeah, so I think that's important, and we listen to that. Their motivation and their reasons for selling and how we maximize their equity, it comes from some of those conversations that we mm-hmm. talked about during the listing consultation. But we also have to bring reality to it. Right. If a seller wants to go out at $50 more a square foot and we know the market's not going to support it, nor would an appraiser appraise for it, we've got to be realistic with them and tell them what we believe the market will and won't support. And we are seeing changes again, downward trends that we haven't seen in, you know, since the upswing in 2008, 2009.
So you're seeing downward trends right now in Atlanta?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. A lot. A lot of
across the board, or because it seems like some areas are pretty hot right now.
No, some of our hottest mm-hmm. in-town markets starting to slow.
Are
so old Fourth
softer.
Ward, yeah.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
The prices are coming down?
Yeah.
Or they're just not selling?
Longer days on the market. And when one of the, we look at a lot of different data. And one of the things that we track is when pending sales are trending below recent sales, mm-hmm. right? So the things that are going under contract are selling at a lower price per square foot than the recent sales. We have an indication that there's a softening in the market. Mm-hmm. When we see at the same time our average days on the market for
start
our active listings, yeah, we know that we're starting. And it's frustrating for sellers because for the last how many years they put a house on the market and it flew off in 3 days.
Right. And
multiple offers.
Bids, right.
Ridiculous prices. And we can't do that anymore.
Wow. So that's interesting. Now, what about like areas like the lake areas?
So our secondary housing markets usually show us softening before. So I was actually in Hilton Head this weekend, had been in real estate in South Carolina, and was talking to some of my friends there, and they've seen a 40% downturn in the secondary housing, which is usually our leading indicator of a little bit of a softening.
So are you seeing the same thing in Lake Lanier, Allatoona, Burton?
Yeah. I don't necessarily have as much lake activity here to make a good judgment on, to really say unequivocally, because we don't have that many lake properties. We do. We actually have a lot more lake properties in Charlotte.
Because I would think this is a good vehicle for lake properties.
Yeah, not. We haven't seen it used as much here, again, as we have seen it with Lake Wylie in Norman in Charlotte.
Mm-hmm.
But we are seeing longer days on the market there.
So any advice for sellers?
I think really weigh your options, right? Know what's important. Some of the things that, again, we focus on is data and how that data helps us make good decisions. We're doing a project right now with data scientists where we're looking at the how we predict the probability of a seller receiving an offer within a certain amount of time. And we're giving them a tool where they can actually move the meter and see if I change my price here, this is how my probability of receiving an offer goes up. So weigh your data and make sure that you know what your options are.
And you can play around with these what-if scenarios.
Yeah.
So now, what's been the most rewarding part of this adventure for you?
I think building the technology with we've got really bright engineers in New York, really good marketing people, and seeing satisfied customers, seeing the reviews that we have, and knowing that we are changing the way that it feels to sell a house.
What was it like that first time, you know, you're online for the first time and you've sold historically in person and all mm-hmm. that, and then you put something up there and the whole thing happens without a human?
Yeah, so my co-founder, who never sold a house, was never in real estate, would tell me, you've got to believe in this and you've got to do it this way, and you cannot physically go there and see this property. You've got to have somebody else. And every time I did it, it got easier and easier, and I had to believe that this is going to happen.
But it was 30 years of history of knowing to do it a way, and now you're saying this way can work.
Yeah, it's been fun. It's been a lot of fun.
So was there ever doubt, like, if this would work?
I think there's always doubt, right? I'd be lying if I told you that there wasn't. But I think the dynamics between my co-founder, who's so young and resilient, and my experience, those two combined together have made a really good, you know, just a good group of people. And the people that we've hired have been great additions to us. And we're as excited about the service as we are the technology. And the blend of those two things has been great.
But what made you kind of take this leap when you had a whole career doing this?
I love change.
You could have just rode this out.
Yeah, I love change. I wanted people
a new challenge.
Yeah, I really did. And I wanted it to be big. I'd had my own company here in Atlanta for a long time, and mm-hmm. it wasn't just about having a company and having employees. It was really changing the way that real estate felt.
Mm-hmm.
And our profession doesn't have the best reputation, right? So I wanted the technology to help that and the service level to go up.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we're accomplishing that. I know we are.
Good stuff. Well, if somebody wanted to learn more, or I guess you need more sellers, right?
Yeah, that's right.
So if you're selling your house,
sellproperly.com, get a valuation.
And then that's no charge to just go
no
through.
Charge.
And then they can go.
No charge for anything all the way through until you list, unless we sell.
And then to do this, then you can, now you have two data points if you're using a Zestimate in this. Now you have two data points.
Yeah, or you're talking to traditional agents, weigh this in as well.
Right. Good stuff, Judy. Well, thank you so much for
sharing.
Thank
you.
All right, hang with us. One more guest. Next up on Atlanta Business Radio, we have Monica McCoy. Welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Monica, you are here to talk about Monica Motivates. What are you up to?
Well, Monica Motivates is a global speaking, executive coaching, and business consulting organization. And we primarily work with both business-to-business and business-to-consumer clients, really helping them to take their business and strategy to the next level. So I'm really excited about, talking to you guys today about my 15-year history in corporate America and making that pivot to come out here and run my business full time to really help underrepresented and women founders.
Well, you're so well-spoken. I'm someone that definitely admires people and their speech. So just listening to you, I already know that you're a public speaker. You're just so articulate. But I just want to know your history and how you got started in this whole business.
Yeah, so I spent 15 years working for the Coca-Cola company. And literally, I was at the peak of my career as a global director for strategy and innovation for the McDonald's division, where I had accountability for Asia Pacific, Canada, Latin America, Africa, and Europe. And I was loving this job. But one of the things that was very fascinating to me is that I was running this multi-million dollar P&L budget. And every time entrepreneurs came to pitch to me to really secure contracts, one of the things that I was really disappointed with was that with some of the underrepresented founders, they just were not able to quite articulate their value proposition. And I said to myself, you know, I'm at the peak of my career. I can keep going, having great stock options, a great salary, or I can just take time to leap out of corporate America, start my own business, and really help these underrepresented founders to really take their business to the next level. And that's what I decided to do.
So what are some of the challenges women and minority have to overcome when working in, you know, businesses like this?
Yeah, I would say one of the biggest things is that a lot of our founders don't have financial or business acumen. And so when you think about it, you know, the foundation for a house, as our previous speaker just said, the foundation for a house is so critical. And when we have a foundation for a house, if there are cracks in the foundation, we know that no matter how much drapery, how much paint you put on the house, it's not going to be beautiful and it's not going to stand solid. And it's the same in business. We see that our founders, unfortunately, don't understand the importance of having a strategy. Right. So many of them don't understand an annual business plan or a strategic business plan. And so unfortunately, many of them are out there chasing the next shiny nugget instead of truly grounded in a vision for the company or a North Star.
So you left your company, Coca-Cola, that you were working for, right?
Yes.
And you started to venture out and do something on your own, which is basically developing women and their speech and how to be better in a male-dominated business or whatever you would like to call it. How was that for you? How was that transition?
I would say the transition was not as hard as I anticipated. Yeah. One of the things that was really the most eye-opening for me was really the lack of resources out there. So you really take for granted when you're working for a multi-billion dollar organization like the Coca-Cola company with all of the vast resources that you have at hand. And then when you're coming out and working with entrepreneurs who've never had any corporate experience and really explaining and breaking down to them some of the core business principles. So that was the reason why I launched Pitch University, was because I literally wanted to help underrepresented and women founders to understand that, one, you have to know your value proposition. Two, when you go in and are looking to secure funding and looking to secure contracts, it is critical that you're able to truly tell why someone should care. Because if you go in there and it's all about you and not about solving a problem, then quite frankly, people will thank you for your time, but unfortunately will not do business with you. And that's one of the major barriers that I help founders to overcome with my day-long curriculum in Pitch University, is really taking them from a position of being me-focused to really understanding what problem are you truly solving and what solution do you bring to the table. And what return investment can you have for potential investors? Because if you think about it, venture capital funders are going to only come in if there's a low risk and potential high rate of return. But if they see it the other way around as a high risk and low rate of return, then unfortunately they're going to pass and go to the next offer.
So tell me a little bit more about Pitch University.
Yeah, so Pitch University literally developed from me doing this experiment. I took 10 founders as soon as I left corporate America to go and pitch to a major Fortune 50 company here in Atlanta. And I just knew that at least half of them would walk away with a deal. And unfortunately, zero of the founders walked away with a deal.
How was that?
Well, unfortunately, many of them went in just talking about themselves and not really understanding that they were going in to actually really come and talk about a solution that they were solving for the organization. Yep. So I knew then that I couldn't just sit there and say, okay, this was just a bad day, but instead I needed to come up with a solution to really bring back to corporations and to founders. So we launched Pitch University for Entrepreneurs in 2018, and we are approaching 1,000 entrepreneurs that have been through the course. We've been globally also, as far as Yaoundé, Cameroon, and then of course all over the United States. But I realized that it wasn't just limited to founders, because there were underrepresented people in corporate America who also needed Pitch University from a different perspective. So we launched Pitch University Corporate at the Coca-Cola Company here in April. And what we found is that many underrepresented individuals in corporate America, women and minorities, unfortunately didn't know how to really increase their influence to actually go and talk to senior leaders in the organization. So we are approaching this from a very strategic perspective of saying we want to make sure we're helping both corporate underrepresented individuals and also that we're helping underrepresented founders, because it's going to be critical with the data that we see for both founders and for corporate professionals to be able to change the data one leader at a time and one founder at a time.
So why did you feel the need to create Pitch University?
Well, when you look at the data, you know, unfortunately last year, only 0.4% of African-American women secured venture capital funding. And then if we think about what that data point was in 2017, it was only 0.2%. So in 1 year, we went from 0.2% to 0.4%. And we know that of the $1.9 billion of the $85 billion of VC funding that was available in 2017, that only that $1.9 billion went to female founding teams. And so if we're thinking about that, that there's $85 billion out there and only about $2 billion of that pie went to teams that were made of all female founders, we know that we have a huge opportunity there. And a lot of it starts with education, but not just from the perspective of the founders. We also have to educate VCs about the importance of really, you know, coming and being a part of this critical initiative.
Now, you mentioned that VCs are looking for low risk and a high return. Right. So that's, you know, that going in. Is there some things that are happening just inherently where minority and women-owned businesses aren't able to present that? Because I would think the VCs are kind of agnostic on where these ideas that are low risk and high return come from, because they're after those kind of returns.
Absolutely. One of the major things that we're seeing is that we have to really educate underrepresented founders on overcoming the solopreneur trap. So if you go in and you do your pitch and you're saying that you're the CEO, you're the CFO, you're the CIO, you're the CMO, initially, you know, it's one of those things where the founder feels like, well, this is something that I'm very proud of, that I'm doing everything in the business. But then if you think about it from the investor's perspective, they realize initially and immediately that unfortunately they're going to be unable to do business with that founder because there's no team.
Right.
And if you were to unfortunately pass away tomorrow, then the business is gone. And also all that VC's money is going down the drain.
Right. So then that means it's high risk. Now, when you're working with the Pitch University and you're doing it, so it seems like there's two sides to this, where one is you have an entrepreneur that you're trying to educate them to be as well prepared as possible in order to get funding or to make these deals with these large organizations. But when you're internal inside of a corporation, that's a different objective, right? They're not necessarily trying to get funding. They're just trying to grow their career. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. Inside a corporation, we are really helping them to pitch for the next promotion.
So it's leadership more and how to position yourself within the corporation in the eyes to show that.
Yeah, leadership, strategy, and influence. Mm-hmm. So if we think about the numbers for women on boards and women in the C-suite of Fortune 500 companies, if we look at the Catalyst data, unfortunately, over the past 15 years, the number of Fortune 500 CEOs has not increased drastically. The data point is pretty much about the same. And when we see the number of African-American women who are on the boards of Fortune 500 companies, unfortunately, those numbers remain dismal. And so we know that we have the opportunity to one, help women, help underrepresented leaders to really find their voice and really maximize their pie. So if we think about performance, image, and exposure, unfortunately, many underrepresented leaders in corporate America are the worker bees for the organization. And what they lack is image, being able to come into a room and really command the room and really understand what's appropriate dress, how to make sure that they're able to articulate a presentation, and how to make sure that they come across and close the deal. And then exposure, if we we think about the leaders who are having the long-term success, most of them are able to gain the exposure on key projects and be able to present in front of the executive leadership team and be able to strategically position themselves into that next role of influence. And so my goal is to educate those leaders on the things that helped me to become a junior executive with the Coca-Cola company and how I was able to do that in such a short amount of time. I don't want to just be the person saying, oh, I made it, I did it. But no, we have to open doors and pull others along with us.
And then that requires kind of putting some political capital at risk.
It does. But what we have seen is that, especially from research such as Adam Grant's Give and Take and from Catalyst Research, is that those organizations that literally are more about team and not about self, but instead bringing the team forward and investing in people, are those who are going to receive the greatest bottom line return on their investment. So organizations that are very me focused, where leaders are very self-centered, you'll see those leaders go up the pipeline very quickly, but then exit the organization very quickly also, because they're known as according to research, they're known as takers. But what we're looking for in corporate America are more givers, those who truly have the best interest of the organization and the team at hand. And those are the leaders who have the longest term success. Unfortunately, most corporations are made up of what we call matchers, those who only will help you out when you help them out. And what we're strategically trying to educate organizations on is that, you know, you literally have to make sure that you're training organizations and your leaders to be comfortable with taking risk and not making it just about short-term results. Because as you know, Wall Street is literally about quarter to quarter. Did you meet those earnings per share quarter to quarter? And if you're not meeting them, then that's a huge, huge disappointment. And so what we're doing is saying, if you're only going to live quarter to quarter, you will continue to experience short-term results. But if you truly embrace having a long-term strategic plan, you will see that your results will follow suit.
So now what do you need more of right now? Are you looking for more entrepreneurs that want to kind of get this education from Pitch University? Or are you looking for more corporate partners in order to implement the Pitch University corporate?
We're looking for both. So for Pitch University, we are excited about our latest cohort that's coming in August. Salesforce is our latest strategic partner who will be hosting our next Pitch University. And we're also grateful to the Coca-Cola company as one of our initial strategic partners with Pitch University. So our classes are currently open for enrollment. You can go to pitchuniversity.com to see when our upcoming classes are for August, October, and December. And then when it comes to Pitch University for corporate professionals, we're also very excited about our launch at Coca-Cola, and we're having our next launch at Salesforce in August. And we really look forward to additional corporate professionals taking advantage of this opportunity to really make sure that you're taking your brand to the next level.
Now, talking about taking your brand to the next level, tell us about your book, Treating Your Brand Like a Fortune 100 Company. How'd that come about?
Well, one of the things that I realized is that corporations invest billions of dollars in their marketing strategy. And what I really want individuals to do is just to take 25% of your time each year and invest in your own personal brand. So if we think about the game of football, there are four quarters in a football game: the first quarter, second quarter, third quarter, and fourth quarter. I'm a huge Georgia Bulldog fan, so please, anyone who's an Alabama fan, don't get mad at me, but I'm a huge Georgia Bulldog fan. And one of the things that I really love about our coach is that he makes great adjustments first quarter, second quarter, third, and fourth. And one of the things that I see with Treating Your Brand Like a Fortune 100 Company is that whether you're a corporate professional or an entrepreneur, you really want to take time to really understand who are you. So what is your personality type? And then not only that, but what is the vision for your organization? And what is the vision for your career? And then next, surround yourself with a board of directors, because if you're doing it all by yourself, you can only go so far. But if you truly surround yourself with a board of directors and a team that has your best interests at heart, that is truly where you're going to see that you're going to have long-term success. But then finally, master the art of the pie and master the art of the pitch. Those who truly know how to go in and tell their value proposition for themselves in corporate America and tell their value proposition for their organization as an entrepreneur are those who are going to truly connect with those who can take their business and career to the next level. It can't just be a me serving, I serving thing, but instead, what are you truly doing to make a difference for the organization in corporate America? And what are you doing to make a difference for your company and for the greater good as an entrepreneur?
Now, is the book out?
The book is out, and you can go to my website, monicamotivates.com, to purchase a copy, or you can also go to treatyourbrandlikeafortune100company.com to purchase a copy.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for sharing your story today.
Thank you.
And one more time for the website.
The website is monicamotivates.com.
And then from there, you can get all your information.
You certainly can.
Good stuff. Well, thank you for being part of the show.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right. This is Lee Cantor for Sanjay Touré. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.